Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor.fm to get started.
From traveling European boy band act to professional historical secretary, guys, I'm so excited to be talking with Benjamin Schnall today on Mini Spotlights. He's an actor, songwriter, musician, and host. We'll be talking all about it today here on Mini Spotlights.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to AfterBuzz TV's Mini Spotlight series, where we interview Hollywood's hottest up-and-coming talent. As I mentioned at the top, I am interviewing extremely talented, multi-hyphenate Benjamin Schnall.
Wow.
So excited to have you here today, Ben.
Thank you so much for the compliment. I appreciate it.
Of course. Candidly, Benjamin also hosts for the network, but you would certainly be someone who would be featuring on the network anyway. So it's fun for me to be in this capacity interviewing you rather than just co-hosting with you.
No, I appreciate it.
Because it's well-deserved. I'm looking at his IMDb now, and in a very quick amount of time, you have racked up a number of credits, and it's a very impressive resume.
Oh, really? Thank you. Oh, my God. Yeah. I appreciate it. Yeah. I was trying so hard, right? I mean, coming from Europe and then now coming over to the U.S. Now, I'm here in the U.S. now for 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. I was just trying to hustle, to be honest, right? I think you have to in LA, right?
You absolutely have to, especially in the current climate. I think even A-listers, you know, talk about having to hustle to get these roles and fighting for auditions. And in good ways and in bad ways, it's not the same industry it was 10, 15 years ago. Right. So a lot of people making their own content, which we'll be talking about in just a little bit, because you're a self-starter, a self-producer. But primarily, you're here to talk about your biggest project recently, which is The Current War.
Right.
If you guys haven't heard of this movie, The Current War is a sort of period piece, an ensemble piece that covers the historical time period where Tesla, Westinghouse, and Edison were all competing to sort of gain both technological and capitalist control over the emerging electricity industry.
Right.
So it kind of has this historical capitalist fight to try to gain power, literally, right?
It was pretty much like a war almost, right? So all of them wanted to be the first innovator, basically, back in the time, right? And it was really great for me to be on set and really also see one of the biggest actors we have right now, like Michael Shannon, for example, to perform right next to me. I couldn't believe it, man.
It's crazy. I mean, the cast that's built in here, so the three inventors I just mentioned, Tesla, Westinghouse, and Edison, are played respectively by Benedict Cumberbatch,
that's right.
Nicholas Holt, and Spider-Man, Tom Holland.
Tom Holland, too. And Michael Shannon.
And Michael Shannon, yes.
Please, George Westinghouse. Michael Shannon.
That's right. Shannon is Westinghouse.
Yeah,
so
that's
those four, I mean, there's not really four bigger actors working today.
Right? I mean, you have DiCaprio and Brad Pitt for you, or George Clooney or something. But, I mean, that's, if you are still on set with those people, that's a different dimension, right? So that was amazing.
Who were you interacting with on set?
So on set, I was basically playing George Westinghouse's secretary. Mm-hmm. So I was basically interacting with Michael Shannon.
Nice.
tall guy, let me tell you that. He is like, oh my God, he's 6'4", 6'5", or something. Huge guy, right?
Yeah.
But it was just amazing, to be honest, to see him on set, to really also learn from him, right? Mm-hmm. Because I always looked up to this guy. I really like his performance because I feel like he's one of those guys, he really takes acting seriously. He really sees acting as an art. Mm. He's just not acting because he wants to be a celebrity or famous. And you can tell on set because he was one of those guys who didn't even talk a lot.
Mm.
He was very quiet. You know, a lot of people were like, hey, why is he not talking? Is he, does he think he's someone better than us or something like that? Honestly, some people thought that.
Interesting.
But he was just method acting pretty much. Right. So he was in character like for 8 hours straight.
Wow.
Not even looking up. He was looking on the ground. And then the director said, hey, Michael, yeah, I'm ready. And then he basically walked off and went to the set and boom.
That's how the pros do it. You know, it's not only fun to watch professionals so you can learn craft, but also just to see them conduct themselves on set.
Right.
There's something really kind of magical about an actor who's just able to turn it on because, you know, with theater, you have time in the wings and backstage to prep when you need to. But with film, they spend hours setting up, getting the shot lit, getting everything right. And then when it's time to roll, it's time to roll, whether or not you're sick. You just went to the bathroom, whatever. You've got to turn it on as an actor. So,
and you know what happened? Like talking about bathroom, I went to the restroom. It's a true story. Yeah. I went to the restroom because I had to do, you know, my business, right?
Absolutely.
So I went to the restroom.
As one does.
Exactly, yes. Right? I went to the restroom. Guys, this is a crazy story, actually. Now I remember that. I went to the restroom and I was just standing there. You know, as you do as a man, you stand there, right? And you just do it, right? And then the door opens and he comes in.
Uh-huh.
Michael Shannon standing right next to me. And I said, okay, I have to say something, right? And I just looked to the left side. Hey. I looked at that. I was starting to have a conversation. I was like, hey, how's it going? But he was not completely there, you know? He was still in his zone, right? And I respect that if someone does that, right? I didn't really take it the wrong way, but the first moment was like, I just said hi. Why didn't you acknowledge that? Why didn't you, you know? But he was just gone, you know?
Well, and I will say, I feel like there are rules around urinal conversation, right?
Yeah.
Like, it might have been on you. And this could be a cultural thing. I feel like Europeans are a little more open in terms of, you know, like, bathhouses and nudity. And maybe it was just the German-American thing. We can chalk it up to
that. Oh, the Germans, the Germans, right, when it comes to being open with nakedness and stuff like that, like going to the beach naked and stuff, we do that.
It's very different.
It's very, I know. That's actually, maybe he thought, oh my God, what kind of European guy is that guy? And
that might have been the issue.
Oh, that's a good one.
But I don't know. That actually probably says more about the Americans than it does about Germans.
Yeah,
so we'll take the flack here. Michael Shannon, he's interesting. He so often plays villains. He's such a villainous presence.
Right.
What is Westinghouse's character like in the film?
He has a lot of authority, mm-hmm. right? Because he basically runs this whole manufactory. So the location was basically like an old factory outside of London where we shot. And he is basically a guy who runs the whole company, right? He has a lot of authority, but he also loves his employees, right?
Mm.
So he didn't really play a villain. That was not really a villain role, right? And I think that was also like a new experience for him.
Yeah.
But we basically did that one scene where he has to convince the investors coming to his office that he's actually capable of being the first one, being the innovator back in the days. And he needs the money to basically prove that to everyone. And that's also where he has that scene where he's kind of freaking out for a second, which was very interesting on set because no one saw it coming. You know, everyone like, and then he basically takes, I don't want to spoil it for everyone, but he takes something and just throws it against the wall.
He has a moment.
He definitely has a moment. And that was so interesting because I was basically sitting, he was basically like that, you know?
Yeah.
His back in the day, you know these old offices, right? You have your big office room and then in front you have these two basically chairs on both sides and you have two secretaries, right? Mm-hmm. Sitting like the opposite. And he basically comes out. And has his moment while the investor's basically standing right in front of us. And he came out with this, like, powerful, like, monologue. He does a monologue in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, okay, yeah. And then I just say, yes, sir. I say something like, yes, sir, because he's asking me something. I should do something for him. I say, yes, sir. And I was so, like, fascinated and also almost scared about this performance that
I actually
really felt what I said completely, you know, even more than usually, you know, because yes, sir.
You have to play intimidated.
I didn't even have to play. I was really like that, you know?
Well, that's great. You know, they say acting is all about your scene partner, right?
Exactly.
So it sounds like he was doing the work that needed to be done for you to be in the moment.
For sure.
And
for sure.
That's cool. For so sure. You play Westinghouse's secretary.
Yeah.
Was that, I'm sure that was just a lot of the same exact place on set every day.
Yeah, exactly. So we did it over, I think it was 3 days. you know, because there was a lot of stuff that was happening. There was a scene which was shot with a Steadicam too, which, as you can imagine, that takes a while sometimes because everything has to fall into place because the cameraman is probably is basically moving and all the action has to happen while he's at the right spot.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that took a while. And honestly, I have to mention that situation also for the audience, which was very interesting. We did that one scene where he's basically coming out and is starting his monologue in front of the investors, right? And he comes out, and then out of a sudden, he said, stop, stop it, stop the whole thing.
Wow.
And everyone was like, oh, oh shit, what's happening now? Everyone was like, oh my God, he said stop. He stopped the whole scene, and he wanted to reset the whole scene. And what happened was, he heard that two PAs, like production assistants, were actually talking outside the building. No one could hear it.
Wow.
No one heard it. But he could hear it. And then when he stopped the scene, everyone was listening. And out of a sudden, everyone realized, yeah, you're right. There were two people talking out loud, like about whatever, like maybe lunch or something.
For sure.
And he was so focused on his monologue that he heard everything.
Wow.
And I was like, wow. I totally understand if I do something like that, if I do a monologue, I have that sometimes too. If someone just basically walks behind the camera with a very bright full color, and you really have to focus and you almost talk into the camera, you really get distracted by that. Right. If it's a sound, if it's a color or whatever. So I totally got it. Everyone was just like, oh my God, Michael Shannon said, stop it. What happened? You know, like very interesting. You know?
Well, I totally get it too. It's funny. I feel like people can be hard on actors and say like, you know, they're a diva.
Yeah,
or,
I know.
But at the same time, when it comes down to it, there's been months and months, maybe even years of preparation for this. We only have 1 hour to get this scene. It's a lot of pressure for actors. Oh, yeah. You know, they have to deliver. So, you know, I've done some behind the camera stuff. And I'm one to give actors a lot of space and freedom and flexibility. Because however you feel about talent, when the camera rolls, no matter what's been written, directed, or produced, it is on the actor to deliver. So you've got to give them the space and the environment to do that. So I respect when talent has those requests. Because you've got to be able to create an environment to offer the best performance possible.
Totally. And I'm really grateful, honestly, that I made that experience, to be honest. I think this is one of those experiences that you'd wish for, you know?
Definitely.
So, and I'm really grateful for that.
So, you have a very busy IMDb. Some of this stuff is self-produced. Some of this stuff is things you've gotten cast in, which is totally admirable. If you had to pick three projects from the last 3-4 years that really stand out to you, what would those be?
Definitely The Current War. We just talked about that as one of those. Definitely, I have to say that. Another one that I did in the U.S., actually, which was very, very interesting for me, was I was part of the new Eminem music video.
Oh, cool.
You know, you probably have seen that, right? So I basically was one of the principals for the Venom music video.
Oh, nice.
You know,
nice.
Maybe you watched the movie Venom with Tom Hardy.
I didn't see Venom, but I'd to. I'm sure our producer in the booth, Ryan, has. He's a superhero junkie.
Oh,
but...
yeah, he must have.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, you got it.
Nice.
No, so, yeah, and also for Ryan, the music video, basically, we shot that in downtown on Broadway.
Cool.
You know, on a, like, walk, like, pavewalk or the pavement or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was really cool because I just wanted to understand how do they do music videos, right? And you wouldn't really imagine how simple it is at the end of the day. Well, I mean, maybe you saw that before, right, backstage or something. They just basically walk with the camera on shoulder and just basically do the whole music video, right? Sometimes.
Yep.
It's just like, it feels like, okay, lowering the cost as much as we can, but it's getting the biggest value out of it, which is totally cool. But that was great for me too, because for us Europeans coming to the U.S. and establishing ourselves as actors in the U.S. is also becoming, it's also about becoming SAG, becoming a SAG member, right?
Yep.
And how do you do that? Right, a lot of people ask me all the time, how do you become SAG? And you have to basically be on a SAG project.
Right.
So that project made me SAG.
Nice.
You know, it's because
you're
Taft-Hartley,
right?
Pretty exactly.
Yeah.
I was Taft-Hartley in.
Yeah. That's
you know,
what they call it. Yeah.
And I was so grateful for that because that's the hardest part for us Europeans because we are not used to that. In Europe, we don't have that.
Right.
In Europe, it's like, yeah, you look good for the part. You can act. Yeah, well,
America loves a union. That's one thing I will say.
Don't get me wrong. The union is a good thing too, right? Because it protects all of us.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
We get the payment that we are basically supposed to get, right?
Right.
But yeah, that was a good one. And also, I really have to point that out too. I did Nazi Megastructures.
Mm-hmm.
That's the title. It's for National Geographic.
Mm.
That I did. It's now also on Netflix if you guys want to check it out. It's called Nazi Megastructures, Hitler's Fortress.
Mm-hmm.
Hitler's Italian Fortress, I'm sorry. Also, nice project.
Mm-hmm.
You know, also good for actors too to have a Netflix credit too. You know, that's definitely something that works. I mean, we really have to talk about that too. You can be a great actor. You have to have the talent. You have to have the look. But people also look, hey, what did he do already? What kind of credits does he have already? Which is a huge part. I needed to learn that when I come to the U.S.
Right.
I think in the U.S., especially in Hollywood, It's also a lot about dropping, name dropping. What did you do already? Mm-hmm. Who did you work with?
Right.
And then I'm so grateful to understand now and to realize that this is also on Netflix, which I didn't know when we shot it. Mm-hmm. No one knew. National Geographic shot it, and then they basically sold it to Netflix.
Cool.
So that's also very helpful. But also at the end, I don't want to make it too long. I also want to say that I also work on short films because I feel like there is a lot of good material out there, even by students, you know, even like smaller stories that are really good to shoot, you know, and you learn a lot.
So. Well, you need to be on sets to learn. That's the thing is, as an actor, no matter how much prep or method work or research you do, the best way is to, you know, be in the trenches and really be on set.
That's so. And you say, I don't want to interrupt you, sorry.
No,
but
please jump in.
That's definitely something I always say for me as an actor. It's all about the connection you have with the camera. Mm. You know, it's very important. It's like a muscle. It's like something that you have to learn over time. It's like we basically creating a relationship by getting to know each other.
Yeah.
So we're going to trust each other more in about 6 months than, mm-hmm. than like if we would have just known each other for 2 or 3 days, obviously. And it's the same with the camera.
Yeah.
The camera is responding to your actions. And when you watch yourself in the movie, sometimes you feel like I do that. I watch a movie with myself in it. And I said, I should have moved my head differently in that scene, in that moment. The second I should have looked down in the second because it makes it even more powerful if I would have looked down. Something like that, you know. And I think you just learn from that, and but you also have to adapt. That's what I'm always saying. You can't just watch yourself and feel like, oh my god, that was actually pretty cool. I'm always very skeptical. I'm also very like, not negative, but
critical.
I'm always critical. That's the one. Thank you. Always trying to look for the next bigger thing that I could do.
You know?
So I think that helps me to improve every day. So.
I like that a lot because I think a lot of actors talk about wanting to pretend the camera's not there, let it disappear. But I think you're right that at the same time, there's no way to truly eliminate the idea or presence of the camera. Yeah. So learning to work with the camera, I think that's really valuable advice for up-and-coming actors.
For sure. And that's – thank you. Oh, my Jeff. I love that, Jeff. Thanks so much that you said that. I'm that serious.
I'm pretty smart. No,
oh, this guy is – oh, my God. People, this guy is smart. No, but honestly, I do believe that obviously when you shoot a movie and you are in the scene as an actor, you don't really look into the camera, obviously.
Right.
But you know, obviously, that the camera is right next to the actor that you're playing against or playing to. But I still believe that you can play towards the camera to make it look great on screen.
Right.
That doesn't mean that you look into the camera, but you can act towards the camera, but still act to your partner in that way. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, you have to know your light. You have to know your lens, you know?
Yeah.
It's acting, you have to be in it, but you also have to recognize that you're on a controlled set and you have to optimize the situation that you
have.
For
sure, for sure.
It's really, really good advice.
For sure.
So you mentioned Nazi megastructures.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Looking through your IMDb, there's probably 3 or 4 World War II-oriented, Reich-oriented roles.
Oh, more than that.
Yeah, probably. A lot of actors talk about getting typecast. You know, African-American actors, especially when they're coming up, are always getting cast as thugs.
Yeah.
Arabic actors or Middle Eastern actors are always getting cast as terrorists.
Right.
Do you feel like as a multilingual German-born actor, you're always getting typecast as Nazis?
Yeah. I mean, for sure, right? I mean, honestly, I would be alive, I would say, no, that's not the case.
Right.
It is definitely a fact. You know, if I come to a room if I go to an audition, right, and I know it's for a Second World War movie, and at some point they realize that I'm from Germany and I speak German, I look kind of German, I have light eyes and whatever, of course they love that, you know, and of course I have a higher chance to be cast for that movie. And I also wanted to say that to European people, to everyone who's watching that show with us, honestly, if you're being typecast, you're still a cast.
Mm-hmm.
You have to see it that way. See it in a positive way.
Yeah.
I was that myself. Don't get me wrong, Jeff. At the very beginning, when I started out acting, I was like, oh my God, I don't want to be the bad guy. I don't want to be the Nazi every time. I want to do more than that. I'm capable to do more. I can be the good guy. But I think you have to understand, especially when you come to Hollywood, you cannot expect that you play the roles that you think are good for you.
Right.
You have to accept that they see you a certain way, and you have to understand how they see you. That's why I'm always saying, and I'm always asking people, how do you see me?
Mm-hmm.
What could I play in your eyes? And people say, hey, you look like you could be the bad guy. That doesn't always mean I have to be the Nazi, but I'm pretty much the bad guy for a lot of people. And then at some point I was like, okay, if that's the case, all right. I accept it. I go with it. Because that's something you have to do. And I'm always saying that to people. I meet some people sometimes coming from Europe, coming over, and they still have that mindset of, hey, I'm going to do what I want to do. And I said, hey, that's great. Mm-hmm. Keep that. That's awesome. But trust me, at the very beginning, no one is asking you what you want to do.
Right.
You just have to give them what they're you asking for.
Make yourself as valuable as
for
you
sure.
can be.
Do it. And yeah. then at some point, and the best example I'm always pointing out, this one guy, as we all know him, he's very respected right now, is Christoph Waltz mm-hmm. in Glorious Bastards. We all watched the movie. Ryan, you watched the movie too, right?
Oh, yeah. It's my favorite Tarantino movie. Look, we got a photo up right now of you in a similar...
Exactly. That's very interesting. That was me basically playing a very similar role, which really reminded me of that like living room role with the French guy in Christoph Waltz, the scene where he basically shoots all the guys, or was trying to shoot all the guys, right? So that basically something that I did. And honestly, I always take inspiration from Christoph too, especially when I play these kind of roles.
He's
right?
a genius.
I mean, I'm not honestly trying not to copy him, but he's a huge inspiration in a way, right?
Well, that's one of the most complicated and most interestingly rendered Nazi characters. Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of times, especially in World War II stories, Germans and Germany are really put into one-dimensional types of roles.
Yeah.
The same thing happens, I think, with Russian characters in Cold War stories.
Yeah, that's right. Same thing.
And it's like Stranger Things. Season 3 was great, but the Russians were very one-dimensional.
Right,
so
right, right.
Whenever there's an opportunity to portray the other side as a complicated role, that's a cool opportunity as an actor.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And don't get me wrong, coming back to being typecast, honestly, now I'm at a stage in my life, also with acting, where I feel like I actually like to be the bad guy.
Yeah.
It's actually quite cool. If you really think about it for a second, it's a very complex thing. Even as a Nazi, I'm always saying that, and everyone is always thinking Nazis are just the very aggressive, outgoing guys, just killing everyone or something. Honestly, right. if you really think about the high-level guys like Himmler and all these people, Goebbels and Hitler and all these people, obviously, they were still very charismatic.
Right.
So you can
charming.
Very charming. You kind of like them even for what they said to you, right? But then at the end, they stacked you in the bag.
Right.
You know, something like that. And I feel like these kind of complex characters is very interesting to get into as an actor, because you really have to understand how these people thought. The thought process is completely random sometimes.
Yeah.
It's not like an average person who just basically does the same thing every day. They sometimes freak out for a millisecond and just feel like, okay, I have to do this right now.
Right.
I just feel like I'm going to kill him right now.
Absolutely.
And then you just do it and you come back and you're still a nice guy. Hey, you know?
Well, yeah, so, I mean, some of the best roles in film history are the villains, right?
I know.
You look at Hans Gruber in Die Hard.
Oh my goodness.
It is funny. It does seem like, especially American Hollywood, loves to take that German character.
Yeah.
Like Ralph Fiennes. I think he's German, right? He may or may not.
Yeah, and he in Schindler's List.
Yeah, he of course plays in Schindler's List, but then he's also Voldemort. But it's funny. America has this way of, I think, kind of reducing Germany.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, when as an American student growing up, when you're studying World War II, it's a very simple story that's told about Germany was, you know, this one-dimensionally evil presence, but it's funny, I traveled to Germany 4.5 years ago. Well, more than that now, but it's one of the most beautiful countries I've ever been to. One of the friendliest countries I've ever been to. And it's a shame.
Really?
I was in South Germany. Maybe that's different.
All the Bavarians are like, they love Americans.
They sure did, but it's funny. It was really valuable for me to see that this version of Germany that was painted for me in school was a much more sort of narrow and one-dimensional perspective on the country.
Oh, yeah. I mean, thank you for saying that, by the way. I mean, for me, I don't want to sound like a teacher or like educating people, but honestly, when I came to the US, you know, I'm just myself, right? I'm German, obviously. I'm born, raised Germany. But I feel that I'm German, obviously, every day, right? I have this German, like, and I mean, even from East Germany, by the way. I was born behind the wall. I'm the last generation from East Germany. So that's different, too, you know? Mm-hmm. People from West and East, they had a different education and different, like, way of growing up. But I'm always coming to the US and I'm always saying, hey, guys, let the past be the past and just understand who we are today, right? I mean, I understand what we did was the most terrible thing almost on earth, right? We all get that.
Right.
But we are the next generation, right? So just give us a chance to show you who we are.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, you know, I'm working on that. You know?
Absolutely. Well, I will say, if you get a chance to go to Germany, I've only been to Bavaria, South Germany,
but
it's like truly just like green rolling hills, and we like cruise down the Rhine.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like, this is such a pleasant country. Right. I really want to go back.
I mean, and Berlin. I recommend Berlin for sure.
Yeah, I loved it. I will go back to Germany because I love it so much.
Yeah.
It's funny, I speak French, and they're just, as much as I like France, they're just not as friendly. I just feel like Germany is a friendlier country than they are.
Je m'appelle Benjamin.
Un peu, oui, un peu. Je parle français, mais pas bien.
Oh, what? Mais, not bad.
Un peu. But.
Not bad.
So I also want to talk, it's interesting, you have this acting career, but you actually came up in the entertainment industry as a musician.
Yeah, that's right.
Can you talk a bit about, I have the name of your band here.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can pronounce this right.
Oh, yeah.
Spectaculaire.
Yeah, that's good.
Is that pretty good?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
All right, can you talk to us about what this is and what your role in the band was?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. It's very interesting. I have a musical background. My family was always like in choirs and stuff, so I basically grew up with this environment. And then when I was about 18, 19, we had this local casting in Germany, right? And by then, the boy bands like NSYNC and Backstreet Boys were already huge in Germany, right? A big thing back in the days. And I think they just wanted to create something also for the German market too, like the first German boy band in a way. And you know how it is. You go to the audition and you see different kind of varieties of people. You know, like dark hair. You have the one with the blue eyes. You have the blonde. You know, you have the tall guy. You have the short guy. Yep. You know, different characters like every boy band has.
What was yours? The light-eyed?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Yeah, I was the light-eyed guys, right? With the curly hair. Yes. This kind of guy. And, and then we basically had, you know, to do like some singing and some dancing and stuff like that. And they basically took me. They basically cast me for this boy band, which was very interesting. So we traveled around Germany and Europe, right? We had our own songs. We did some cover songs from Take That. Do you guys remember Take That?
I remember Take That, yeah.
Oh, you got it. That's
sure
awesome.
Do. Like the big boots, right? Yeah, exactly. Yes, that's what I remember.
So we did like NSYNC and Backstreet Boys covers too,
you have to
create that name, first of all, and then do your own songs too, right?
Nice.
And that was a great experience because I learned a lot about like being creative as a musician, being with other people, you know? But I also learned a lot about the business side. Mm. And we have to all understand if it's film, music, whatever it is in the entertainment industry, it's a business too.
Right.
Right. And I'm always saying that to a lot of people when it comes to music or acting or whatever. You have to be creative. That's the first thing. I believe if you want to be creative, do that first. Be creative. Write your own story. Do whatever you feel like. But also understand how to work on your business too. Because if you create a very good movie, you still have to know how to market the movie because you still have to get the money into maybe do the next movie.
Right.
And I think a lot of people don't understand. They're too much thinking about the art and forget the business side.
Yep.
And that's what I learned as a 19-year-old already. You know, it was very great at the beginning, but then at some point, you know how it is. They just drop you.
Right.
You know, we did it for 2.5 years, and then they just say, you know what? I think we want to move on.
Wow.
And that's basically when it basically ended. But I'm really grateful. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, sure. Valuable.
And now, exactly. Now I do a lot of singing, like solo projects. I do a lot of songwriting with other artists, too. Collaborate with a lot of people. You know, music should be a part of everyone's life. I think music is very important, you know?
Definitely.
So, yeah.
And I have to ask, too, obviously you're probably like quadrilingual, right? I feel like Europeans just speak every language. I know you speak fluent German, fluent English.
Yeah.
Do you speak any other languages?
I mean, I speak a little bit of French. Mm-hmm. So I'm not completely fluent in French, but I did movies in French already.
Okay.
So we did one movie where I spoke German, English, and French in one movie, in one scene, actually. So I basically talked to different people from different countries and changed the language in milliseconds. That's not easy. I was like, whoo, that takes a minute.
I'm sure.
But it was great. So I had French in school for 6 years. Right?
Okay.
So I'm not fluent, but I can make it sound French, if that makes sense. So
yes.
If I learn the lines and I know what they mean, I can sound French. But I wouldn't say I can hold a conversation with a French guy just like that.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Obviously you speak perfect English. Do most Germans speak as fluent of English as you do, or?
Yeah, I mean, it depends where they're from, right? That's a very big point, to be honest.
Yeah.
If they're from the countryside, you know, it's a different story.
Yeah.
So countryside is very different. So they don't really speak a lot of English. It depends. That's why we have every show dubbed in German still, by the way. If you watch German television, also for American people, if you don't know that, it's all dubbed in German. We have a lot of your shows, The Office, the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, The King of Queens, all these kind of shows, 2.5 Men, it's all dubbed in German perfectly. You wouldn't even believe that these people are not German because the movement and the dubbing is perfect. It's on point. Because for the people on the countryside, they don't really speak English and understanding, so you still have to do it. If you go to cities like Munich or like Berlin, different story. Everyone speaks it. But I have to say, I used to live in London 4 years before I came to the U.S. So
nice.
That was a huge change for me, you know.
So what were the biggest differences you noticed between European English, American English, and just the culture of London versus the culture of the States?
Oh my God, how much time do we have?
I know. Maybe your 2-minute breakdown.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing I have to say, we start English in school in Germany, right?
Right.
So, but we learned the British
English.
You're
probably learning British.
Yeah, so I used to say, can I get a glass of water, please?
Yeah.
Something like that, you know.
It's the classier English, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what they say, right?
Yeah.
It sounds a little more posh or whatever, right? So, but I never really got into it. I always wanted to sound more like you guys.
More American?
More American.
Oof.
Because I...
The worst accent. I'm from the Midwest, which is like notoriously kind of like an annoying American. Yeah. It's like very shallow vowels.
I can't even tell. That's the foreigner, I guess. I can't really tell.
Yeah, it's fairly neutral. The giveaway for me would be like an expression like khakis or backpack. It's a very shallow A.
Backpack?
Exactly. It's almost. I'm pretty close to Canada where I grew up, so there's almost that Canadian shallow vowels that you kind of hear.
So how would someone from California say backpack?
More like your backpack, man. Backpack. Like it's a deeper like, yeah, man, go grab your khakis and your backpack. Whereas I would say like, yeah, my khakis and my backpack are back here.
And always at least one man or dude in the sentence, right?
Yeah, dude, just go grab your backpack, bro.
That's the first thing I learned about people in California. Yeah, if you don't say dude, they know exactly that you're not from California.
Totally,
right?
Dude. Yeah, totally.
That's so funny to me. But seriously, what I also have to say, and that's just something that is so attractive to a lot of people, like non-American people. Mm-hmm. And I'm not always sure if a lot of Americans even feel the same way. I have this conversation very often because a lot of people ask me specifically, because I'm German, from Germany, why did you leave Germany? Are you crazy? That's a great country. You said too. It's a great country.
It is, yes.
People ask me all the time, why did you come to the US? Are you crazy?
Right.
And I've said, honestly, the thing about Germany is I love the country. I love Berlin, especially. I'm from Berlin. But people, I believe, are still a little bit more reserved, more conservative when it comes to especially creative things, you know, like being an actor, just doing something creative and make a living off of it. It's still a different like perception.
Traditional, maybe.
Yeah, for sure. So if it's about engineering and machines and stuff and you want to build stuff, Germany's perfect for you, right? But when it's about the art, you want to be a musician and you want to be like an artist or like in general. The U.S. is on a different level. Do you feel the same? Do you understand that as an American
way? Right. I think when I traveled to Germany, I did notice there was like a commitment to systems and tradition. Oh, not in a bad way at all, but...
Right.
Yeah, I think. And you know what? I grew up in the Midwest, which is, I'm from Ohio. That's also a very traditional part of the country.
Gotcha.
So, you know, I could pursue an artistic career in Cleveland, but it wouldn't be as much of a safe ecosystem for me to pursue those dreams as it would be on a coast.
Yeah,
the coasts
that's right.
are more sort of fertile if you want to sort of explore a creative career.
Right.
I can relate to that for sure.
Right. No, I mean, that's exactly what I felt. So when I came to LA for the very first time, that was back in 2009 when I was 22, 23, I was like, wow. Have you ever had that feeling that you come to a city and you just land? I will never forget that day, Jeff. That changed my life. I'm that serious. I came out to LAX airport. I came out the very first time as a German guy, young kid, right? Very first time in America, coming to LA. And I came out of the airport and I knew that's home for me.
I love it.
I'm that serious. I really mean that, right? You know the Germans don't say stuff just like that. We mean stuff, right? When we say it, we mean it. So I really mean that. Yes, we do. And I was like, wow, what is happening here right now? I felt so connected immediately because the vibe that you guys have is like anything is possible. If you work hard for it and you work smart, you can make it happen.
I love that.
And that's amazing to have because I feel if you are someone who has a dream and you know what you are capable of, which is important too, I believe, you have to know what you are capable of and who you are in order to make it.
Mm.
If you have that and you have a vision and a dream, this place is still the best place to be, to become the person who you want to be. And in Germany, it's more like, don't get me wrong, we have a lot of creative people too, and we're open with ideas, but it's still like in a way that sometimes people say, let's say if I'm German, right? And you come up in Germany with an idea to me, and I'm the German guy, and you would say, hey Ben, I have this crazy idea about like a website, like social media and stuff like that. The German might say, oh yeah, that's interesting, Jeff. That sounds really nice, but what's happening if it's not going to work out?
Is that realistic?
So, well, what do you do? I mean, what's plan B? How are you going to get there, Jeff?
Interesting.
You know, and I've said that's not bad either, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to have a plan.
Pragmatic.
That's exactly right. And I'm that same person too. Sometimes I'm still very pragmatic, but I'm also a dreamer. So I call myself a realistic dreamer, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
So I have a plan in my head, but for me, it's more like that. I have a goal right here, but I go like this.
I love it.
But I still have the goal in front of me. And I believe right now what I learned about LA, being in this country or in this town for 2 years, LA is more like, okay, now I go to the left for 6 months and I do this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that I don't come back and just move forward.
Couldn't agree more.
It go like this. And then I'm still a little bit more forward.
Yes.
But sometimes you just have to come out of your comfort zone, maybe do something where you feel like, that's not exactly what I came for. But I now believe that that doesn't matter.
Right.
It still gets you back. It's just a different path.
I couldn't agree
more.
And
I think if you accept that, it's like a mindset thing. If you accept that, you can definitely make it happen. And I think a lot of people, because we have to say, we have to be honest and realistic too, LA is very competitive. It's, it's a tough town, guys. It's, if you guys are in America and you live in a different town and you want to come to LA, you have to understand it is competitive, it is a tough town.
Right.
But I believe, as I mentioned, if you're capable of who you are, and you know what you're capable of, and you know what kind of dream you have, and you understand that sometimes you have to get out of your comfort zone and do stuff that you don't really feel, but you know you have to do it, then you can make it happen.
You'll find your place, right?
You do.
Absolutely.
And you have to have, and also, sorry, I'm very, very passionate about
that
topic.
It's all good. I love it.
Because I learned so much, and I really like sharing that experience, especially with people who are maybe from a different country too. Mm-hmm. What I also learned is that being in the business, in entertainment industry, in Hollywood, I always say Hollywood, but I mean the whole town with that, mm-hmm. is that you have to play the game too.
Yes.
You have to play the game, and by that I mean, sometimes, hey, you know what? In Germany, we don't say, hey, how's it going, Jeff? How's it going today? You know, it's a very American thing to say.
Yeah.
You don't probably even mean it every time we say it.
Right.
You know?
You just say it.
As a German, it's like, okay, he asked me how I'm feeling. If I'm shit, I'm telling you that I'm shit. You know what I mean? But that's something I needed to learn. That's just a phrase. It's just like the moment of feeling, making you feel comfortable. I give you a good feeling in that moment.
Right.
That's an American thing that people do in LA, I feel.
And they just lie.
And they're basically, yeah, they do that too.
It's different, right?
It is different, but you have to play that game to a certain extent. But then on the other hand, I have to say, when you become private and you go back home, you have to have a very solid network too of people you trust.
Mm-hmm.
That's so critical. Seriously, if you don't have anyone in this town that you can trust, that's tough. You get lost for sure.
Well, you know what? I feel like that's perfect advice for us to go out on, Benjamin. I really appreciate it. If any of you guys are thinking about making that leap, I've lived here, 4 or 5 years now,
I couldn't
agree more with everything you just
said.
So I really enjoyed this talk, Benjamin.
Oh, man. Thank you so much for having me. Thanks so much.
What's next for you?
Oh, my God. Next for me is I'm actually doing a shooting next week.
Great.
Funny enough. So I do a general again. I play a second World War Nazi general.
Nice.
Which is a very interesting thing, though, because it's like a mockumentary.
Oh, cool.
Which means, like, we do a documentary, but we also have, like, fictional scenes in it.
Interesting.
Which is a very interesting topic. I keep you updated on that.
Great.
And then also, we're going to shoot a feature film at the end of the year.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, where can they connect with you online to see all of this being promoted?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So definitely check out my Instagram at Benjamin Schnau. With Benjamin and Schnau, S-C-H-N-A-U. And I'm always saying, think about the dog.
Yes,
Schnauzer. Without the Z-E-R.
Yes, and that's just so you guys know, that's B-E-N-J-A-M-I-N.
That's right. That's correct.
It's Benjamin. So make sure you check that out on Instagram.
That's right. Also on Facebook, Benjamin Schnau, the same name. My IMDb account, if you want to check it out, what I did so far, is also the same name, Benjamin Schnau. And I'm always posting stuff, right? Also when it comes to music, do a lot of songwriting sessions recently.
Great.
So, you know, hopefully maybe having the next big hit too. Who knows?
Absolutely. You know? You guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Jeffrey C. Graham, and then on Instagram at Jeffrey Crane Graham. If you want to see some other stuff I'm doing here at the network, on Mondays I host our Bar Rescue After Show with our CEO and founder Kevin Undergaro, and I am both very proud and ashamed to admit that I host our Bachelor franchise after shows as well.
That's
so
great.
I know, I love it. So you can catch me on The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, or Bachelor in Paradise. That's Mondays. And it's going to be Tuesdays for Paradise at 8 p.m. on our reality channel. This has been Mini Spotlight, guys, where we feature Hollywood's hottest up-and-coming talent. Today, I interviewed Benjamin Schnau. Benjamin, love getting to know you today.
Thanks so much, Jeff, for having me. I really appreciate
it. Of course. And we're getting out of here, but we'll see you guys next time here on AfterBuzz TV.
Bye-bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.